pudding people to another episode of Everybody Loves Pudding. We are your hosts, Ken Seymour, Richard Geiger. Mutants extraordinaire?
Yes? Question mark?
It's been 6 years.
I say we've got a couple season-ending things that we're experiencing.
Yeah, it's really hard to believe. We are finishing out our sixth year of podcasting, talking about the end of the first season of the expansion of one of our favorite childhood animated television programs, X-Men 97.
Very good. I wish it was more than 10 episodes and is easily one of, if not the best things that I've seen this year.
Yes, I've been very satisfied with this. Now, obviously, if you have not finished season one by the time that you listen to this, we're recording this at towards the end of May in 2024. Go back, watch the show, the first season. If you haven't seen the original show, you know, just pick a few episodes. You don't have to watch the whole thing. If you watch the whole thing, you'll be pretty happy, I think. But if you don't want to be spoiled on anything that we're going to be talking about, because we will be going into the plot and
potential future plots.
Potential future plots, a variety of different things. And we don't want to ruin any of the joy that you'll have in going through this.
Yeah, it's, you know, the first bit that we talked about really gives us an establishing set of people and ideas and like what's going on in the world of X-Men in 1997. And then what we get from the last chunk here is really just
fallout.
It hits the fan, right?
Yeah. I don't want to say it's the logical progression. It is the daytime drama progression of all of the things that have led up unto this point. You have been warned. Going forward, we will be talking about bits and pieces and things that you may or may not wish to know about. Now, if you didn't realize this, there are those of us that come into this as longtime comic book fans, and some of us that just watch the television show. Mm-hmm. And then there are people that are anywhere in between.
Correct.
And so, you know, you're somewhere in between there.
I'll go with in between, yes.
And I've been watching, I've been reading comics since I was a wee lad. And the X-Men were always something that was on my radar. And that was why I so enjoyed that original show, because it had done a better job of presenting the characters in a much more interesting way. And, you know, we've got that extension in X-Men 97. The thing that really makes me laugh, though, is, you know, you remember the original show and all of the storylines that they went are storylines that they picked and chose certain ones to portray that were from the entire kind of library of the original comic book.
Mm-hmm.
And so the direction that they go with this, with the exception of some clear just fan pandering, which I am perfectly fine with, they chose a storyline that came out in 1996.
I mean, coincidence? I think not.
No coincidences there. I thought that was amusing, or maybe more accurately, the character that is the big bad guy came out in 96. And it touched on things. You know, I had my theories of how the season was going to be ending, and they left the seeds for it, and it kind of went the direction that I thought it would. What do you think about how they kind of introduced and kind of maintained DaCosta throughout?
DaCosta, so that's Sunspot.
Yes.
I don't know the comics enough to know how strong of a character in terms of his presence was, right? But I do like the fact that in the original show, so we're talking about this show, in the original show, Jubilee was kind of an annoying character, right?
Yep.
Didn't give a lot of substance to it. She was there, but they didn't utilize that character for too much other than, you know, a couple storylines, couple things here and there. But in this season, they've used her quite a bit. And she's been the accompaniment, right? Like, she's been the thing that gives this character more meaning, more purpose, right? So they've given him his own corresponding storyline as a teenager. And I like that perspective. Do we get to see how really powerful he is? We see hints of it, I feel like. But yeah,
bits and pieces.
In this storyline, he's always hidden his powers. So he's got no practice. He doesn't know ultimately what he can or can't do.
Now, for those of you listeners who are not comic book fans, the Sunspot character was never originally an X-Men character. He was kind of a spinoff character, first appearing in The New Mutants, which was a really fun book and introduced a lot of really interesting characters. Elena Rasputin kind of magic went around with them, as did Wolfsbane and Sunspot and Cannonball. And, you know, it's just a really, you know, it was intended to be the next group of mutants, because the problem with comic books in general, one of the problems is, okay, you introduce that team or those characters and they get popular. And a lot of times the reason that they get popular is they speak to the youth of the time. And then the youth gets older.
And they get older.
So those characters stay popular, but not with the youth.
And the characters don't age.
Their characters don't age. So they have to introduce somebody else. So they're always trying to come up with that next group that's going to be that connecting point to the current generation of young people, which is why we just get iteration after iteration after iteration of these superhero groups. We saw it in the New Mutants. We saw it in the New Warriors. We saw it with Cloak and Dagger. When they came out, they were kind of tend to be the kids' things on the DC side. You would see it with the Teen Titans, you know, a variety of other characters and groups from that, too. It's just, I do find it a little amusing. So I liked how they treated him as a character. I really would have liked to see him as part of the New Mutants, because I tell you what, they're using the Technorganic virus, which originates from a character that isn't even in the show. That was one of the New Mutants.
Well, did I see in, you know, in some of these episodes, like one of the last, there's battles, right? Battling it. Was there a New Mutant that showed up in one of those little snips?
I seem to remember that there was, yes.
So maybe it's just, this is a gateway.
Maybe. So we'll see. But, you know, the Warlock character, I mean, in some respects, kind of stinks of Jar Jar Binks. In the way that the language is, but it's actually a really interesting character, and his race is much more important to the landscape of the Marvel history and especially the storylines of the mutants more than most people realize. So it's just, I mean, a lot of the recent X-Men stories were a result from that. I mean, if you looked at any of the recent Sinister stuff, if you looked at any of the recent, you know, X-Men storylines with Krakoa and all that sort, that's a lot of that is directly intertwined with that storyline.
And I feel like what you said before about storylines and where it was ultimately going, that there was all these little sub storylines. Now, what you usually would get in the original show, right, was bits of a story that would kind of scatter throughout the whole season, but it wasn't a season, an episode to episode thing.
No.
Right? You just had a thing to pop up and these people did this and they did this. And in this one, you have more of that episode to episode. But within each episode, you'd have those little subplots that in the comics were larger storylines,
right?
Big storylines. In here, yeah, condensed to, you know, an episode.
Here, have a sentence.
Yeah, half an episode. And I definitely think it's hard because with these comic books being as old as they are, there's just a plethora of storylines and characters and things. How do you pick?
Right.
And how do you introduce and what do you leave out? And if you're going to pick this thing, what do you leave out of that particular thing? So I said before I wanted more episodes for this, right? And there surely could have been in some of these smaller lines. They could have been stretched out. You could have done 12 episodes just pushing some of the tinier storylines. If you're going to do an episode that's half an episode of Mojo, you could do a whole episode. Come on, like that. I love that whole atmosphere, attitude with that character and the stuff. And they condensed it to just a tiny little snippet. So there was always room for more.
Yes,
and it's interesting to see because I feel like what we got out of this just leads to so much more. How are you going to do the next season? 10 episodes and you're going to just condense things that could be 5 episodes into one? That's what I'm kind of curious about.
It's kind of a no-win situation because either, at least how it hits me, you either have to kind of attack the storylines as they happened in the comics or you have to completely rewrite everything to pick and choose the storylines that you want, because there's so much history and there's so much interwoven bits and pieces between these storylines. There is a lot that goes into everything that they're doing. So, you know, when they were running that television show back in the 90s, I mean, I didn't see what they were doing at the time. I guess I kind of see it now, however they were trying to say, okay, we'll do some of the older storylines, but just enough so we can catch things up to modern day, and then we'll basically be keeping kind of online with the basic storylines. Maybe not perfect, but close enough. But that was 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm. So they still are keeping up in terms of the time frame.
Right.
But me not knowing the comics is the subject matter from, you know, 2015 interesting enough to pile into these episodes? Does it relate enough to pile into the storylines that they've already produced?
The storylines are interesting, no doubt. But again, without the groundwork, I don't know how they do it. So I would be okay if they just maintained 20 years ago and kept going and brought it forward that way. If they want to have a time jump, and have like a one or two episode, here's what happened in the intervening years between X and Y. Okay, I'm okay with that.
Explain it, please.
But you don't just jump. Please, 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 God, don't just jump, because I kind of feel like that's what you're about to do. I'm getting that sinking feeling because the storyline went basically the direction that I thought it would. But the problem with the storyline that they're doing is it could easily be warped to try and bring them into the present, which would be such a mistake.
Well, I'm wondering if they're trying to do timeline stuff or if they're trying to do dimensional type stuff to then introduce if they've shown us all these, you know, other Marvel properties, this is a way to integrate those Marvel properties in their current lineup with the X-Men, which is really more from 20-30 years ago.
So, and here's the fun thing. So you know how in every story, whether you're watching a movie, television show, reading a book, it's like, okay, there's a very specific set of rules for time travel, if you're going to have time travel and you follow your rule set, right? That's not how it works with Marvel. They have like 6 sets of time travel rules that all exist simultaneously. And it results in some just mass confusion and chaos in terms of storytelling. It took them, what, 40 years to decide on a backstory for Wolverine because of that, because they kept changing things around and different writers would come in and have different ideas, but they always wanted to leave a little bit of the mystery and intrigue, so they reveal a little something, but this little something actually contradicts the thing that the last writer did, which built on the previous writer, but not the writer before. And it's just kind of, oh, it got really, really complicated, and unnecessarily so, in the X-Men for a while. It was hard to keep straight.
It's Canadian.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
Technically, no.
No.
So the main bad guy in this they decided to bring was Bastion.
Sebastian? Well, Bastion.
Bastion, yes. So, you know, they, for a choice of a bad guy, I guess, considering the themes that they've been doing and what they were doing, I guess it makes sense. Okay, sure.
It's always been the overlying theme, right? The overlying theme of, you know, inclusion or exclusion or hatred, if you will.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, that was fine. As thing is, as a villain goes, truthfully, in terms of X-Men villains, he's kind of forgettable.
Yeah, but I think he was in place only as a placeholder, too many places. Anyway, to build on something worse.
Right.
Right. So this was, if their plan was to hopefully do, let's say, 2-3 seasons, this was just the entry into those next couple of seasons, which delivers more bad things to people.
Yeah, and we'll see if they do anything more with the character. I'd be fine if they just kind of ignored him going into the future. That'd be just fine and dandy for the most part with me. Never one of my favorites. They did tie up the Storm storyline pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
That was nice. I mean, a little bit of a forced romance thing, but you got to have the romance between her and Forge at that point.
Well, I did appreciate, you know, it was like, we're gathering ourselves for the final battle here, and they didn't have their proper outfits and uniforms, so we're going to put on the old school ones. But then there was I think maybe it's touched on more in the comics, but we saw it more in this than I think the previous, you know, episodes. When I say previous, I mean like the original series, the family aspect and the sisterhood aspect that they shared, they really showed the kind of tight bond that they had established. And they don't throw it in your face so much,
no.
But like, they've been together for how many years,
yeah.
Right? You've got to rely on each other, and either you've become tight knit and you rely on each other and you know your strengths and weaknesses, you know how to help and you know how to be part of a team, or you fall to pieces. And I think they've only strengthened their bond over time. And they gave us little hints of that I don't think is oftentimes put in your face as like these guys are their own family and they're their own set of, you know, relationships.
Yeah. No, her inner relationship with most of the team, I thought was done real well. They just kind of brought Forge in fast. Which, I mean, I guess they kind of had to a certain extent. Mm-hmm. And I'm okay with that because that was a fun relationship to have while it lasted. But just like any other comic character, they all date around so much. Never end up with anybody for too long. Except for the Reed and Sue Richards. They're pretty much always married. But otherwise...
A happy couple.
No. But...
Your son's born. I'm going to kill everybody.
No, it wasn't the son. It was the second one.
The second. Okay.
So, anyway, I thought that was okay. Nightcrawler had some screen time and was fun while he was on there. I got to say, you know, just all the characters got treated pretty well. But, you know, we commented in the early parts when they had the fight scenes that they stepped up their game,
mm-hmm.
a little bit, and they continue to towards the end. The choreography, if you want to call it that, just top notch.
Well, you know, Gene slinging, you know, things and making things with their mind to help battle stuff. But just shows that she's obviously very powerful. We already talked about the Cyclops character and the fact that really, ultimately, he's just a dude, but immensely athletic, of course.
Right.
So you're right. So you see all the little battle sequences, and you get to see Rogue, of course, just, you know, smashing heads again, which I still do appreciate, showing more power and strength than what you are, I guess, normally used to seeing. We saw it in some of the other episodes, but they continued on with that too. You know, Beast getting slung around and beat up actually quite a bit.
Oh yeah, he was a punching bag, but he always is.
Being very resilient still. And of course, Wolverine just going all in on stuff because he, you know, he can be hurt, but he can't be hurt. So I do like all of the different sequences they do. But then, of course, in this one, in towards the end though too, it's like a worldwide battle, right? So we got to see other heroes in little snippets,
yeah,
doing their bits to fight all the bad guys. So we got to see you know, micro spots of their kind of battle sequences, which I thought was nice.
Yeah, it's nice to see a little bit of Daredevil, a little bit of Cloak and Dagger, get to see some Alpha Flight in there, some of the Russian, you know, characters. It's just kind of all over the place. The most amazing action sequence was, of course, with the Silver Samurai as he stood on the edge of the building the exact same way in both shots.
Yes, just staring into. Yeah, I didn't quite understand that necessarily, but it's just a call back, call forward, call in between. I don't know what you call it.
Call forwarding, yeah. Star 69.
You know, and I guess we should also comment on this too, because we're talking about the whole second half. So there was some good. My brain keeps going to like the final couple episodes, but there were good battle sequences with Nightcrawler.
Oh yeah,
right, slinging the swords all over the place. That was cool. Him, he's so good in this presentation of him going from place to place to place to place and being in the right place at the right time. I think that stuff's pretty neat too. Who else did we see in there? Cable. We got to see that, you know, him commenting that he is a, you know, elite, world-class, what do we say, he can manipulate things.
Sorry, I was looking for, who are we talking about again?
Cable.
no, he's telekinetic.
Telekinetic, yes. Yeah. And I feel like in the previous, in the original series, you didn't necessarily get a lot of that. You got him being like a soldier, right?
Yeah. Again, talking about that techno-organic virus, that's the whole thing. He's using his powers to keep that in check the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the whole point, because it's a nasty, nasty thing. You know, if you know, I talked about being kind of disappointed with their use of the Goblin Queen for a single episode and kind of the way they did it. Well, you know what? One of the demons in that Inferno storyline got the technorganic virus. It's everywhere in the storyline. It is, like I said, it pops up in every single spot. So, I mean, it's, yeah, they do what they can, but they're going to miss just a ton. So I guess if I'm saying anything, if you enjoyed the show, which how could you not? It's super good. Go back and read the comics. It's even better.
Even better.
But hopefully, I think they already got picked up for another season.
I think so. I thought I saw it was in production, maybe?
I mean, they left the thread lines that we get to see the origins of Apocalypse, which is good. That's a fun storyline. And if they do it right, we'll see if they do it right. He'll be fighting Ramatut at the time. Who knows? If you're unfamiliar with who Ramatut is, then that's one of the Kang variants. That would be a way for them to have their cake and eat it too, so they can have Kang without actually saying the word Kang, so that they can kind of avoid the Jonathan Majors kind of taste. Kind of rubbing
off. We already kind of saw him,
right,
in some sequences, not necessarily named.
No.
We were guessing that's who that was. So,
but we got that. We got the far future where we get to see a little bit where some of the House of Skaani comes from, and there's some really fun bits of storylines with that. You know, lots of time travel with the X-Men, and then we're going to get to see a new set of four horsemen. That'll be really fun.
And we were chatting days ago about some of the storylines because I'm just not familiar with it. I'm familiar enough to know, you know, we saw, as you know, once again, spoiler alert, Wolverine get all his adamantium pulled out of his body,
right?
But he's going to get it back, and that's one of those storylines that we right. assume is going to happen through here too.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, it's one of those clubs that a lot of characters eventually join. There are so many that have been horsemen of the apocalypse. Even the Hulk has been war. So
dangerous.
Really dangerous. So, you know, it's just kind of interesting stuff. I can't wait to take a little look-see at the next season when they bring it out to us, and I'm hoping it'll be a lot of fun.
So what was the other storyline that was embedded in there, too?
The future or the...
Well... The onslaught.
Well, yeah. So they're building to that. So he's already done the attack where he took control of Magneto. They're not going to have him kill the character off. I don't think that they'll go that direction with it. They may even skip over it completely, but I don't think so. They've already shown the negative kind of emotions. They made a point of saying, hey, this ocean is all the negativity, and that it's not just going to hurt you, it's going to hurt me. It's the whole setup where just a portion of him is going to be within Charles, and it's going to slow. I think that's going to happen over the course of the second season,
mm-hmm.
and we'll get Onslaught at the end of the second season.
Which then would lead to the third season.
Right.
In theory.
In theory. So... we'll see.
And I bet we'll see more of those other characters too.
Yeah.
If they planted the seed. I mean, we saw X-Factor quite a bit in snippets from different episodes. So I have a feeling that we'll see more of those other teams or other heroes in some form or fashion. And I'd like to see, okay, so Apocalypse is the bad guy, and that's going to be the main storyline, let's say. It'd be curious to see what other one-episode one-offs they're going to do to throw a whole, you know, six-month, one-year comic book runs into
a single episode.
A single episode.
Ooh, this is both exciting and kind of anxiety-inducing. Because it could be really bad. It would be really easy to be really bad if they do it wrong.
Are we going to see, why is my brain not work? The main, basically the main bad guy with the things in the...
You're talking about Sinister?
Sinister, yeah. So.
There was some very quality pantomiming that you did not get to see.
Correct, yes. So obviously in this one, she played the we had Jean play the Phoenix card
right
again.
Need a MacGuffin? Need to change something? Here comes the Phoenix. Here
comes the Phoenix. I could feel it inside me. Anyway, so the Phoenix sucked out all of the basically evolution that he had that was keeping him, you know, youthful.
Right.
And so he looked hideous. And he even said, I look hideous, you know, like it.
And then Morph made fun of him.
Yeah, like funny. It was funny. So will we see him again then in the...
Oh, yeah, you can't get rid of Sinister. Especially if they're going to be going with the retconned history that we've learned in the most recent comics, yeah, get rid of him is basically impossible.
Because he's a clone of himself. Is that what you're talking about?
Kind of, yeah. There's a lot to it. There's a lot that you learn. One of the things we'll learn in the next season for sure. Well, maybe not for sure, but I mean the whole thing is, you know, part of the reason that he gets his abilities is because of Apocalypse.
Oh, so, well, I guess that makes sense.
Yeah. So, anyway, so what did you think, dear listeners? Did you enjoy the second season as much as we did?
I hope so.
I was going to say, I didn't hear anything, so I'm going to assume that's a yes.
I've definitely watched each of these episodes multiple times. It's easily consumable. Okay.
Except for the last one,
which is an hour long. And I have no problems with it being that long. I just haven't watched the last episode a second time. That's all.
Right. And it's not that it's not going to happen. It's just you need to set just a little more time aside to do it. But yeah, next week after this airs will be season 7's first episode. And I cannot wait to tell you about this once we figure out what it's going to be.
Correct. And let me tell you, it's going to be an episode.
Yeah, we've got a list of options that we just haven't. It's one of those dartboard scenarios. Like, we've got a lot of great ideas. We should really come up with something. All right, we'll talk about it again.
Yep. Corkboard? Yes. Okay.
All right. So we'll come up. We've got a lot of good stuff coming, and we can't wait to welcome you into the 7th season of Everybody Loves Pudding. Thank you very much for joining us on the journey.
Appreciate it.